Thanks for checking out this podcast from Christ Church of Ornogo. Our hope is that it helps you discover completeness in Jesus. Now for this week's teaching.
Well, good morning, church. Hey, let's open our Bibles to John chapter 17. We're going to be in two texts this morning, John 17 and Exodus 33, if you want to make your Bibles ready for that. John 17, Exodus 33. If you're visiting Christ Church, my name's Mark. I get to be one of the ministers here. We're glad you joined us for worship. We're beginning a new series this morning called Experiencing Life with Jesus. And we're going to be taking the series we just left on the covenant. And we're going to be talking about then what has God given to us, not only in a relationship, but how do we go deeper? How do we choose and make choices every day to experience life with Jesus in the way that God desires for us, and that actually the way we desire to experience that as well. And so I want to take you to John chapter 17, in verse 24, and show you where Jesus reveals to us what he wants for us. And if we pay attention to it, it should encourage our hearts that it's available to us. So we read John 17, 24. This is a prayer that Jesus prayed. Father, I want those you have given me to be with me where I am, to see my glory, the glory you have given me because you loved me before the creation of the world. Righteous Father, though the world does not know you, I know you, and they know that you have sent me. I have made you known to them and will continue to make you known, in order that the love you have for me may be in them and that I myself may be in them. It's kind of an intricate set of sentences that Jesus puts together here, but if you allow me to, I'd like to just share with you the direction we're going to go today in this particular sermon, and that is that Jesus is saying to God, God, can they have with you what I have with you? This is prayer. Can they have the depth of relationship with you that I have? And if Jesus would ask God for that, remember, Jesus would not ask for something ridiculous. He would not ask for something improbable. He actually asked God to give what is God's will to us, that we have a relationship with God to the same degree that Jesus has a relationship with God. And I think it's beautiful. He doesn't pray that we would just not sin anymore or that we would be safe and happy. He prays that we would go deeper, that we would know God in a more intimate way, to experience God in a relationship. There was a survey done of people who attended church, and I thought this was fascinating. This was done 6 or 7 years ago, and they asked people who attended church 3 or more times a month. So what they're really looking for, people who have chosen to make the church community a part of their life, a part of their focus. And they asked them why they attended church regularly, and the overarching answer was to experience God in a deeper way. It wasn't just to go to events or be a part of programs. It was actually to experience God in a deeper way. Now, I want to take you to the book of Exodus. If you don't know the backstory of Exodus, I'll try to give it to you briefly. There were a group of people that were Joseph's family. They were God's chosen people. He had called the great-grandfather Abraham to start this group of people that he could change the world through. And Joseph then rescues these people from a great famine that's coming by bringing them to Egypt, where he had been enslaved, but now was the second in charge of everything. And he brings them and he protects them. And then Pharaoh dies and Joseph dies and a new Pharaoh comes into place that doesn't remember any of the good that Joseph did by saving Egypt. And he enslaves all the Jewish people and turns them into servants. God calls a man named Moses, who was born and raised in Egypt, but he was Jewish. And Moses comes back and he leads the people out of their slavery into the promised land. The Passover happened. You might remember the blood on the doorposts and those that were passed over from the judgment of the firstborn dying for their sin. And instead they go into the wilderness and they come to a place called Mount Sinai. It's a famous mountain in the Old Testament. And Moses is allowed to go up on the mountain to meet with God. God had been talking to Moses and they go up on the mountain and God has some very, very specific commands to Moses. First of all, he says to him, I'm going to meet you on this mountaintop. You're going to come to the mountain and I'm going to come down and meet you on the mountain. He said, you're the only one who can come up here. If anybody else comes up here, they die. He says, if anybody remaining below puts their foot on the mountain while I'm on the mountain, they die. If any goats happen to wander away and climb up on the mountain while I'm on the mountain, they die. If any cats think about a mountain while I'm on the mountain, they die. So you get this, that God is saying, my presence on this mountain is not to be treated casually. And this is a lesson for all of us. The presence of God in our life is not something we're due. It's a privilege. It's a privilege to gather in this place today and sing and talk and think and praise the name of God. It's not our right. It's been granted to us in his goodness. And so Moses goes up on the mountain and God gives him the standard for his people. This is how you are to live differently than the world lives so that they will know my goodness and they will turn to me. Moses comes down the mountain and they have taken their ornaments and they have put them together and they've created this gold statue, this idol. Why? Because for 40 days, Moses has been on the mountain and they've heard nothing from him and they assume he's gone. So they go back to the gods they're familiar with, the gods of Egypt. Moses comes down the mountain with the law on tablets and he sees that they have traded the real God in for another fake God. They have not learned anything. Moses smashes the tablets on the ground to say, we can't even get started with this. And he goes back up the mountain. Exodus 33, verses 1 through 6. Then the Lord said to Moses, leave this place, you and the people you brought up out of Egypt. Now, I want you to notice here, who brought him out of Egypt? God. What does he say to Moses? Take those people you brought up out of Egypt. God's making a point here, isn't he? And go to the land I promised on oath to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, saying, I will give it to your descendants. I will send an angel before you and drive out the Canaanites, the Amorites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites. Go up to the land flowing with milk and honey, but I will not go with you because you are a stiff-necked people and I might destroy you on the way. I'm glad you're chuckling because I like this God. Have you ever driven in a car full of kids and you threatened to pull it over and make them walk home? God did too. Have you noticed here? It's exactly what he just did. He's like, get them away from me. He has done everything for them. But notice, I want you to notice something. The punishment is not that God breaks his covenant. Remember what we learned the last 8 weeks? Every covenant of God is based on his character, not ours. And God says, no, I told you I would give you the land flowing with milk and honey, and I will even drive out the enemies in front of you, so it is your land. I am going to do what I said I would do because that's who I am, but I'm not going with you. And actually, Dr. Timothy Keller says something profound. He said, this is what most of us practically want from God. I want all the blessings without the relationship. I want the political and physical and social prosperity, but I really can live my life without God being involved in it at all. So God says, this is what I'm going to give you. Verse 4. When the people heard these distressing words, they began to mourn and no one put on any ornaments. I want you to remember the word ornament for later. Just remember that thought. For the Lord had said to Moses, tell the Israelites, you are a stiff-necked people, and if I were to go with you even for a moment, I might destroy you. Now take off your ornaments and I will decide what to do with you. So the Israelites stripped off their ornaments at Mount Horeb. Now jump down to verse 15. Then Moses said to him, if your presence does not go with us, do not send us up from here. How will anyone know that you are pleased with me and with your people unless you go with us? What else will distinguish me and your people from all the other people on the face of the earth? Moses has gotten it. Having been in the presence of God, Moses realizes having land and having money and having freedom means nothing. It's all temporary. If at the end of all of it, I die anyway, what is life to be? So God says, no, I'm going to punish the people for another act of rebellion, and they don't want me in their lives, so I'm going to grant them their wish. And Moses comes back and he says, no, we don't want that. Now they did, but he didn't. And Moses pleads with God. So here's the first point I want to make today about this concept of the glory of God that was revealed to Moses that changed the way he saw his world and his life. The glory of God is what our hearts most need. Whether we know it or not, it will prove out over time that understanding the glory of God in our life is actually what we were created for, and it's what will be the only thing that fulfills us. So God says, I'm not going to go with you because this relationship matters not to you. And Moses said, it does to me. Having experienced the presence of God, he'll have none of this. He says, if your presence doesn't go with us, I don't want to go. I actually hope that that might be our prayer this morning. That we would cease going without God and simply say there is no reason to go and do anything without him. Because his presence is what our hearts most need. You see, if we don't have the presence of God, nothing we do matters. Nothing we do will last. I know this is a dour thought on a Sunday morning, but truthfully, 30 years after we're all gone, very few people will remember we've ever been here. So to base our entire life on creating a legacy that will be evaporated moments after we stop breathing is a frightening thing. Yet we follow by faith, not that our legacy may go on, because we realize our legacy matters not. It's God's legacy. It's God's glory. It's God's beauty. And this is what Moses knew. Because if you ask yourself the question, why did God create us? There's a lot of bad answers. But one of the good answers is this, that we might experience, radiate, and reflect the majesty and beauty and faithfulness of God. This is why we're here, that we might represent God on earth, that we might reflect the beauty of God in such a way. You see, when we look at it, you may think, well, if God created me to reflect and radiate his glory, then he's an egotist. He created us to walk around going, God is awesome, right? You think, wow, he must be really needy to think that's what he created us to do. Well, there's some false presumptions in this. First of all, God doesn't need us. Let's straighten that story out right now. There is nothing we give God that he is lacking if we don't give it to him. The glory of God is the glory of God, whether we acknowledge it or not. So in the midst of all of this, is God egotistical? No, because God doesn't need relationships. He already has it. He has it with the Son and the Spirit. The Trinity has pre-existed everything. They created all of this together, and they did it with love for each other, and they each reflect their glory. It's amazing when you see in Scripture how many times God shows his glory upon Jesus and the Holy Spirit, and the Holy Spirit on Jesus and God, and Jesus on God and the Spirit. You see how this works. They spend all of their time complimenting and loving each other, not because they have to, because they get to. And there's joy and perfection among them, because they choose to love and bring each other glory. You see, God didn't create us because he needed us. He already had that. He created us because we need to know him. We need to know how beautiful and magnificent and kind he is. And that's what Jesus prayed for. That the glory of God is what our hearts most need. So he said, he came to earth to be among us that we might know. And Moses got to see the beauty and majesty of God, and it was overwhelming. Second thing I want to point out is that each of us is able to find life in his glory. It's not just why we were created. It's actually because this is where we find life. This is how we learn to lose ourselves to find real life, real living, real hope, real purpose. I don't know. I wasn't at the meeting when all of civilization got together and decided that creating a look at me culture was a wise move. I would have voted nay. I don't know when, I wasn't at the meeting. There's a lot of things that get voted on in our culture that I'm like, where was I that day? This is one of them. That we now decide that every thought we've ever had, every opinion we've ever derived, and every food we've ever eaten needs to be displayed for all to see. I disagree. There are some thoughts we have that should be kept within ourselves so that we never have to say, I'm sorry. And yet in a look at me world, I want you to know, as part of Jesus' kingdom, he created the opposite of that. He said, look at God. Don't look at yourself, look at God. Find the beauty and glory of God and share that with the world, because that's what the world needs too. And in that, you and I find life. In fact, we actually find out who we are. This big authentic self everyone's after can only be found when we understand who God is and how he lets us be a part of his story. It changes the whole perspective on all of it. Look at verse 17 and 18 in Exodus 33. The Lord said to Moses, I will do the very thing you have asked because I am pleased with you and I know you by name. Then Moses said, now show me your glory. Moses gets greedy here and I like it. God has just said, okay, because of our relationship, notice how important that is. Because I love you and you love me and you're choosing to love me in this moment, I'm going to go ahead and go with you even though you don't deserve me to. And Moses says, show me your glory. Now, I'll equate it this way. My two-year-old granddaughter will look at me every now and then, especially when I sneak her candy or food her parents don't want her to have. She'll look at me and she'll look right at me and she'll go, more? She's not satisfied. Most two-year-olds aren't. And it's really cute. She's like, more? And I'll look at her mom and dad and go, what do you think? And they're like, you know, I'm the grandpa, my house, my rules. You know, and they'll look at me, go ahead, right? Because I want to be that grandpa. But when she says more, I want her to have more. And Moses looks at God and he's like, this was awesome. More? Show me your glory. God, show me more of you. Show me the depth of your faithfulness and beauty. God, there's so much more. I can't even fathom. I remember when I was a little boy, and I'm not making this up. I want to be sincere about this. I don't want this to be aw. I want it to be a truth. I remember a story or a moment in my life when I was probably 4 or 5 years old. The only reason I'm guessing that age is because I wasn't in school yet, and we were at the house that I was born into. That's all I remember. But my mom had gotten me out of the bathtub, and she'd set me up on the toilet, and she was drying me off with a big warm towel. And she sat there, and she started counting the freckles on my nose. And she looked at me, and I just remember distinctly my mom being right there with me. She's counting. She says, "You now have 5. And I felt so proud. I'd grown 5 freckles. But in that moment, why do I remember that so distinctly? Like it's a fond memory in my childhood, because there was intimacy. There was closeness. That's my mom. And of course, I was her favorite. So there she was, counting my freckles. She knew the number of freckles on my nose. She knew that 2 had popped out that summer. I just remember being like, wow, she likes me. That intimacy and closeness. I want you to feel that same sensation when Moses looks at God in this powerful moment and he says, "More? I want more of this. I want more of this relationship with you. I want to know your heart and your mind." It's a powerful scene. That the God of the universe knows the hairs on your head and the freckles on your nose, and he knows the things that really press your buttons, and he knows the things that make you laugh that laugh that seldom people hear. That's our God, and that's a part of his glory. Oh yeah, don't step on the mountain when the holiness of God is here because we're sinners. That's a part of his glory too. God is revealing to us in all of his beauty who he is. Because if the glory of God is not what we're pursuing, we will never know him. I want to say that again. If the glory of God is not our pursuit, we will never truly know him. Because you can't know God and not know his glory and not dive deeply into it. We live in a world where people, and in fact, let's be honest, we've all said this, haven't we? Statements like, "I like to think of God like this." Or, "I can't believe in a God like this." Or, "I don't want a God like this." I've been a pastor for 3 decades. I've thought those thoughts annually. Something happens. I'm like, this doesn't make sense. God, you could have stopped that. Why didn't you? And I'm grateful that within the glory of God, he lets me question because he's got nothing to hide. He will prove his goodness over time because the Lord's timing has never been mine. And his timing has always been right. So in those moments that we try to create a God, as they say, in our image, we need to reflect on the revelation of the glory of God. So back when Heather and I were in college, I think I was a junior, she was a sophomore, and my aunt and uncle were rather wealthy and lived out in Phoenix, and they invited us to come out and spend spring break there for several years. We'd go out and stay with them for a free spring break. It was awesome. And one time they decided to take us up to Flagstaff to go to the Grand Canyon. And I remember going there that day, and we got out of their car, and we joined a tour group, and they took us to one of the areas overlooking the huge, and I remember him looking at me, and he goes, "So what do you think?" And this was such a profound moment. It's one of the smartest things I ever said. I looked out of there, I said, "It's big." And my girlfriend, now wife, looked at me like, "Wow, really? Mr. Articulate, that's what you came up with?" And I was like, that's all I could say. I'm not even playing. I couldn't have fashioned a sentence. I was so taken by how big it was. And then the tour guide walked over and he handed me a rock and he goes, "Can you throw that rock out there?" And I said, "Yeah." So I reached back and I launched it as far as I could out there. And he looked at me and he goes, "It'll take it 2 minutes to hit the bottom." My mind evaporated. I still don't know what he meant. I'm thinking it would take 30 seconds at the bottom. He goes, "No, it's deep enough. If you threw that out to the deepest part in the canyon, it would take 2 minutes from the time you released it till it finally landed." I still don't know what he meant. It was so vast. It was so glorious a thought, I couldn't compare it to anything. Now, I had seen the Grand Canyon on an episode of the Brady Bunch. I knew what it was. So I want to ask you this. How many of us, our impression of God is from a scene in Brady Bunch? Instead of actually going to the crest and looking over the beautiful vista of who God is, well, I don't want to believe in a God like that. Let him tell you who he is. Let him show you who he is. Stand there and be awed. Let the glory of God overwhelm you, and it will be less about what you expect of God, and it will be more about how he is revealing himself to you each and every day of your life. As I like to say, once you've seen the Grand Canyon, every other cliff is just a cliff. And once you taste it of the glory of God, your heart's going to cry out, more, please, just a little bit more. Whatever you give me is more beautiful and glorious than anything else I have. Psalm 16:11. You have made known to me the path of life. You will fill me with joy in your presence, with eternal pleasures at your right hand. This is our God. His glory is what your heart is designed for. And in his glory, we find life. And Moses had to make a decision. Verse 18. Again, Moses said, now show me your glory. And the Lord said, I will cause all my goodness to pass in front of you. I will proclaim my name, the Lord, in your presence. I will have mercy on whom I will have mercy, and I will have compassion on whom I will have compassion. But he said, you cannot see my face, for no one may see me and live. Then the Lord said, there is a place near me where you may stand on a rock. And when my glory passes by, I will put you in a cleft in the rock and cover you with my hand until I have passed by. Then I will remove my hand and you will see my back. But my face must not be seen. That word face and the word presence are interchangeable expressions. And so Moses wants X and God gives him Y. Not because Moses exposed God, but first of all, God doesn't actually have a face. He's not a physical thing. He's a spirit. And Moses says, I want more. I want to see you. I want to see what you look like. And God's like, no, you actually couldn't get away with that. You see, Moses was not sin-free. Moses did not have his role of leadership because he was perfect. He was a murderer. Moses was actually invited by God because God is kind and God is gracious and merciful and compassionate. So when Moses says, show me X, God says, no, I'm going to show you Y. I'm going to put you up against the rocks. I'm going to hide you in a cleft to protect you. I'm going to place my hand over you, and I'm going to go by and give you the smallest glimpse of who I am. Because the revelation of God is incremental. It's not all at once. But God has to protect Moses from his holiness because Moses is a sinner. So he protects him. I want you to keep that thought and remember that. Now jump to chapter 34, next chapter over, verses 5-8. The Lord came down in the cloud and he stood there with Moses and proclaimed his name, the Lord. And he passed in front of Moses, proclaiming, the Lord, the compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness, maintaining love to thousands and forgiving wickedness, rebellion, and sin. Yet he does not leave the guilty unpunished. He punishes the children and their children for the sins of their father to the third and fourth generation. Moses bowed to the ground at once and worshiped. So God's got hidden in this cleft, this crack in the rock, this little cliff. He's got him hidden there and he's covering him. And he comes by and he gives him a small glimpse of who he is. But it's not the image that affects Moses. It's when God says, I will show compassion on whom I show compassion, and I will bring judgment on those who reject my compassion. And it's in that moment that Moses falls on his knees and worships. Why? Because Moses realizes he asked God to show him his glory. And if God had showed him his full glory, Moses would be dead. He would be judged for his sin and he would have been destroyed. But instead, God, in compassion and mercy, and this is why Moses falls, because he realizes he is being kind to me instead of judging me. And so he falls and he worships. In the same way that Jesus would say, not my will be done, but yours. Moses realizes that God has allowed something else to take his place. You see, the glory of God is what our heart most needs. And we only find what it means to live when we have understood the compassionate mercy of God toward us. Then it makes our desires and wishes lesser. It makes the things that we make important in our life less important. The last thing I want to say this morning, I hope to encourage you, is this. His glory is for the asking. Jesus did not pray this as an improbability. Jesus prayed it because he knew it was God's will that we know his glory, we experience his glory, and we find out our lives in his glory. So why do we want this? so we feel more powerful or connected. No, no, don't make this into a selfish venture for more ornaments. Turn this into something that Moses did. Look at verse 16 again, back in chapter 33. What else will distinguish me and your people from all the other people on the face of the earth? Moses is like, no, don't just send us in with financial prosperity and property and no more enemies. That's not enough. We want you, because how will the world distinguish us if you're not with us? How would we be any different? In fact, the word distinguish, I'm told, is actually the Hebrew word for holy. How will we be holy if you're not with us? We can't do this on our own. And God, in his pleasure, said, Moses, that's right. And that's why, because you know me and I know you, I'll go with you. And his presence remains with us. And three or four different times, God says, take off your ornaments. What does that mean? Well, I believe in this context, even just parabolically, ornaments are anything we use to make us feel safe. You see, when Moses went on the mountain for 40 days and was meeting with God, they decided to take their ornaments, which is interesting because they had nothing when they were slaves in Egypt. And when they left Egypt, God commanded the Egyptians to give them money and riches and glory on their way out. And instead of thanking God for what they had, they turned what they had into their God. So I want to ask you this. If you really want to know the glory of God, can you get rid of your ornaments? Can you give away the things that give you a sense of security, but isn't actually your real security? Can you turn off the noise in your world to pursue the glory of God? See, because if you want to go stand on the vista overlooking the Grand Canyon, you're going to have to leave Missouri. I'm an Indiana boy. There were no mountains in the entire state. If you wanted to see a mountain, you had to leave the comfort of where you were and pursue the thing you wanted to experience. I'm telling you the same thing today. Take off your ornaments and lay them down. There's no security in them. Pursue the glory of God as the most valuable thing you'll ever have, and you'll find it. But you have to give up living the life you want to live the life he's offering you. It's a picture here. Jesus might say, seek first the kingdom of God and all these things will be added. So when you look at this, God's revelation of his goodness is his glory. I will be compassionate and show mercy to those I show compassion and mercy to. And that's all of us. The fact that we live on his earth is because he's kind. The fact that he's given us all that he's given us is because he's kind. You see, Jesus said, those who hunger and thirst after righteousness will be what? Filled. This is one of his promises in his kingdom. And this all comes back. So preacher, tell me, you keep saying, pursue the glory of God. How do I do that? And I want to tell you. In John chapter 1, verse 14, in the introduction to John's story of the life of Jesus, John makes it very, very clear. The word became flesh and dwelt among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. How do we see the glory of God? It's in Jesus. When God explained to Moses, I'm not going to show you my physical being. I'm going to show you by my actions. I'm going to show you by what I do for all of you that you can trust me and that my glory is in my goodness. And then John says, and he sent Jesus in the flesh. This is why in John 17, Jesus could pray what we started with this morning when he said, Father, reveal the glory you have given me. And all Jesus did was come to reflect the glory of God to a world who would understand who he was. What does this mean? Well, it's very simply depicted this way. On the cross, with Jesus on the cross crying out, forgive them for they know not what they do, you and I see the face of God. The glory of God is seen in Jesus. What's amazing to me is on that same cross, while you and I look at the dying Savior for the people, suffering even the pain of death, saying, not my will but yours, and choosing to reflect the glory of God through the resurrection that would happen 3 days later. In that moment, you and I see the face of God. But don't you forget or miss this for a moment. In that moment, Jesus saw the back of God. When he cried out, my God, why have you forsaken me? He received what we have earned. And we receive what he earned. We see the face of God in the glory and majesty of salvation and resurrection. And Jesus saw the back of a God who, because the sins of the world were poured out on him, God turned his back in holiness, and Jesus suffered the wrath of God on the cross. If you forget that, then we have misunderstood why Jesus came. And then he says about us, God, let them have with you what I have with you. Use my life and my death, my burial and resurrection, use that to reveal your glory to their hearts and souls. Generations that precede us would never understand what Jesus did. And we are so special to know that God sits us up and he counts the freckles on our nose. He knows our fears, he knows our nightmares, he knows our joys and our passions. We see the face of God looking down in our rebellion, and he says, Father, forgive even them, because they don't understand what they're doing to themselves and to others. But when we see the mercy of Christ, it changes who we are, and we begin to live differently. So I'd like to ask you to think about something. Do you want to know him more? Are you a child that says, I want to know that God. I want to know him more deeply. I want to give you something to do. Can you sit down with him and turn off the noise? Can you move the ornaments out of the way, the entertainment and the busyness and the excuses, and simply say, no, I want to sit. I want to leave where I am to go to that beautiful vista of the glory of God, and I want to stand there. I want to take him in. And I want to ask you about your heart. Is your heart telling you today that there's things of the earth just aren't satisfying you? There's got to be more to this life than just showing up, working, dying, trying to find pleasure that lasts for a moment? Because I think your heart's going to tell you what my heart is telling me. Mark, all the things you're investing in that aren't going to last, what do they matter? Spend some time looking into the glory of God through the faith and life of Jesus, and you might find exactly what you were created for. If you're hungry for that today, there's people at the back room at the tables that are lit. You can go back and talk to them or go out into the foyer and the prayer center. We connect you in any way we can to walk this walk. Do you want the glory of God? Because Jesus says, it's ours. And the goodness of the Father says, come to me, all who are weary, and I will bring you rest. Let's stand together.
Thanks again for checking out this podcast from Christ Church of Ornogo. We hope that this teaching is helping you discover completeness in Jesus and encourages you to help others do the same. If you're interested in learning more about Christ Church, visit us online at cco.church.